Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
I am your host, Tanya Communication Doctor, and the reason I do this show is because I want to provide a space for people to speak their authentic truth, coming from a heart space rather than a head space. Allow people to get into their space of consciousness, their space of confidence, and their space of connection. This, I think, promotes positive mental health, and this is why I do what I do. Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have the Nina Grunfeld, who is the founder of Life Clubs. So welcome, Nina.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here, Tanya. Thank you.
It's lovely to have you on the show. And you know what's really lovely? Because as I said to you earlier, I'm kind of coming to the close with regards to Real Stories, and I'm going to be doing a few stories now. And I think I've got maybe two more to go after this one before we start talking about topics. But it's a lovely way to kind of speak to you today about a book that you're writing. Is that right? With regards to the children who have not basically spoken openly about their fathers. Do you want to talk to me a little bit more about that, please? Because I feel this is just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it's slightly different, but basically that sort of thing. But so when I was 21, I mean, I grew up, my parents were divorced. I grew up with a mum and a dad, and they divorced when I was six and my younger brother was four. Mm. And so we lived with my mother. And when I was 21 and at art college, and my father said, oh, look, I'd like to take you to a part of the world that's really important to me. I'd like to go to see my family graves in Poland. I mean, he'd actually been born in Germany and they were family graves in Germany, but Germany had become Poland. Oh. And anyway, long and the short of it, we went on this trip and he showed me all these family stuff and he was delighted. The bus stop was called Grunfeld after his grandparents who lived there and what have you. And we got to the airport and he said to me, have you ever thought that you were adopted? And I said, no, never occurred to me. But if I was adopted, I think I wouldn't mind if so long as I knew who my mother was. And this was a sort of huge segue to him. He then said, well, I'm not your biological father. Wow. And he told me who my biological father was, who I knew, I'd known, he sort of was around when I was young, but had died when I was 16. And for years I've been, you know, it is a huge, huge super shock when that happens to you. Just like, I mean, the first thing I thought of weirdly was like my dad's mother had lots of pregnancies. She'd been, I can't remember whether it's rhesus positive or rhesus negative, she'd had loads of miscarriages. And so I always thought, well, that will happen to me because it's hereditary. And suddenly it was like, well, okay, if he's not my father, that's not going to be part of my story. And so what else do I not know about myself? So it was suddenly like, oh my goodness, so who am I? I mean, half of me isn't who I thought I was. And the other half of me has been lying to me for all my life. Mm. So is this sort of like you're living in this conspiracy of silence where no one's told you anything? And it was just, it was a real shock. And in that moment, I actually felt like I'd lost two fathers. I'd lost the one I called Daddy, who just disowned me in a way, and my blood father who had died. So it was, anyway, I sort of thought, well, as I got, I mean, I've written loads of books and I thought, well, what I'm going to do one day, probably when I retire, that was the way I thought about it, I'm going to write a sort of like a autobiography. But I've never written anything like that. My books are really factual, they're how-to books, they're not at all like that. And I just didn't know how to do it. My son, who is a really good natural writer, came up with a you know how it should be done. And there are lots of books coming out at the moment of stories, and some people are really good writers, and I just thought, I'm not going to do that. But I would like to do something about it. And so I'd always been collecting stories of people that I knew who were in similar situations. And I thought, I'll start by interviewing them and then see where we go. And so I've just been interviewing people, and from there it's grown. So I've got more people that I've interviewed, but I'm really looking for people. So it's lovely. I mean, if anyone's listening who, with whom what I've just said resonates, it would be fantastic to talk to them. And I think it's really therapeutic for them to be able to talk to someone, as well as for me to be able to hear someone else's story. So it's only an hour, the interview, but it's a very nice way of just learning about someone and sharing an experience.
You know what, I think that is key, and that's another reason why it was great to have you on the show today, because it's a bit of a call out really for people in those positions as well, I feel. And your story is very unique, but I'm sure what I've realized is when you tell your story that people will resonate with your story who have gone through similar things.
I mean, it's interesting. So there are lots of sort of similarities that come out in the stories. Not everyone feels the same, but that whole, quite a few people say how difficult their father was to live with. And so it makes you think, well, maybe the fact that their father was so difficult was meant that they were also difficult for their wife, for the mother. Mm. And that's why the mother had an affair. Yeah. So there's a, you know, that could be a reason. You just don't know. I mean, not everyone. A lot of people have said their dad was gorgeous, so it's not necessarily that. But it is really interesting, the sort of themes that run through when you ask people. Everyone's had very, very different experiences. Mm. But there are just certain themes that seem to repeat a lot.
Yes.
And so it's really interesting hearing those, even through these different stories.
But I think it's even worse, like you say, when you're in the middle of something, as you said, when you're in the middle of the parental deceit, because as a child, there's the innocence there. You don't know what's going on. You don't know why. And I suppose if you're the child as well, you're going to experience a different kind of love and a different kind of connection to what your mother would have experienced, or different mothers or fathers experience with each other. And I think that's always interesting within families, in that connection really, isn't it? Because you may have a connection with your father or your mother, and you see that person a certain way. Even like me, as a, you know, thinking about my parents, I had an idea of my parents, and when they passed away, I got to hear all these lovely stories about them from people who had known them from they were young. It was particularly interesting speaking to my mum's friend who had known her when she was 16. And I find it fascinating speaking to her, because I didn't recognise my mum. is that my mum?
Lovely. So you see her from a completely different perspective.
Exactly. You? Yeah. That's it. You recognise it. My God. Because she was talking about my mum, and she was a bit mischievous and what they got up to. And I was like, wow, is that mum? And then you can kind of see yourself a little bit, because you have this idea of this mum being a certain way, or having to be. There's a lot of pressure, isn't it, you think, as a child, because you're thinking, God, mum has to be a certain way. And then you realise, okay, and you get older, your mum's a human being, she's a person, or your father's a human being. They're going to have life experiences, just like everybody else is having life experiences. And then you learn to forgive them. And I learned to forgive them, you know, forgive them, because sometimes we put so much pressure on our parents because we believe they need to behave a certain way, and they're just human beings going through things that we're going through. So it's interesting how you as a child see the parents and vice versa. So it must have been really interesting for you in terms of, in that one day, realizing, okay, I don't know who my father is. I no longer feel connected or feel disconnected, or, you know, I mean, what did that feel like, that particular day that you were told, that's not your father? Yeah. What did that kind of evoke within you? What did that bring forward, you know?
I mean, I actually felt incredibly angry with my mother. Mm. I mean, I think that was the overwhelming sensation, and I didn't really want to see her. So instead of, when we came back from the airport, I went straight to stay with a friend and his mum. He was staying with his mum at the time in the country, and because Yes, and it was really lovely. And she was just an incredibly wise woman. And she said, you know, don't think of yourself as a bastard or illegitimate or whatever. Think of yourself as a love child. Mm-hmm. And that was a really nice way of putting it. And it made me feel much better. But I just didn't want to see my mum. I just thought, how could you have lied to me all this time and not told me? Because, you know, just going back to adoption, because it's really interesting. I mean, when you adopt, as you were saying, you get like almost like a handbook. This is what you do. And if you have a test tube baby or if you have an affair, I don't know that there is a handbook. I mean, I don't know about test tube babies.
Maybe you should write one, how to.
I mean, well, in a way, this is kind of what I'm doing. It's sort of, I mean, every person who I've interviewed has told me what they wish they would have happened, and you know how they wish their parents would have handled it rather than how they actually did handle it. Mm. And that is, you know, even looking at ancestry.com, I mean, they've got no handbook for how you should look at their site. And I mean, their site is causing a lot of trauma.
Wow.
People are finding out things about themselves that they don't know how to process. And it's, you know, it is really, I think people have a huge responsibility when they're doing something like that, when they're starting a site like that. I mean, yes, it's fabulous to know, and I'm sure it's helped lots of people in lots of different ways. There is a, I don't know if you've seen a program, Stacey Dooley, I'm doing a program on DNA.
No,
and it's showing how DNA can really help with children and with their any inherited diseases or non-inherited diseases. But you know, it's also showing how it can bring up stuff about you that, you know, if you haven't got a therapist with you at that time or to help you process it, I mean, how do you suddenly find out that everything you've believed has crashed? And I mean, I at least had a human being who was my dad tell me that it was all a lie. But if you're suddenly in the middle of, you know, your room and you're looking at your computer and kind of all this information just flashes up, that's really traumatic, I would think. It is.
And I don't think it's a good thing in terms of, I think you need to be with someone to find that out, as you say, because it could, you know, when you're not thinking straight, it could lead to all kinds of things, really, wasn't it? You know, some people could take drugs, or some people could commit, you know, they're the extreme people committing suicide because they didn't, you know, it's all of these feelings that come to you when you realize, oh my God, this is the truth, or is it the truth? There's all those questions, is it the truth or is it the truth? And then you need to find out, well, how did that happen and connect. And it, like you say, it was nice that at least you had a human being, you had your father that actually told you the truth. But there must be cases out there where there are affairs and there are various things that happen, and you don't find out, some people may not even find out the truth until they're very old, or not till a lot later, or sometimes it's like maybe an aunt or a family friend or someone knows the truth, but they're holding that information because, you know, I don't want to mess up the family, or I don't want to rock the boat, so to speak. And then when that person passes away, the truth comes out. I'm just thinking about all of these things that could happen, do you know?
Yeah, I do happen. I mean, so one of the people I've interviewed, he found out when he was 66. His niece said, oh, let me buy you a DNA test from one of the companies. And that's when he found out.
Wow.
And, you know, he just said, I mean, luckily he's a very sensible guy, but it is quite something. And and someone he knows, I mean, he was saying that the mum had a test tube baby, and that's the girl that he knows, who's now a woman with her own children. But I mean, she was the mum was told to tell her between the ages of 8 and 11, and that's too old, I think. I mean, it's a bit like you going back to saying adoption, you ought to know really from right at the start. And I think you ought to with test tube as well, because to suddenly, in fact, the mother didn't tell her until she was 16, and it was very, very traumatic for her. The whole test tube thing, I think, is very, very difficult and dodgy.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I think that with the law of the adoption, I know that's changed over the years, because before people didn't know, and they, as I said, you have to know straight away. And I think it is because test tube is quite a fairly new thing. So I think it is important that children know as soon as they can talk, you can, even if they understand, they may understand in some kind of a way, but it's just, it will help apparently, because they found psychologically it's really damaging when you find this out later. So the sooner you know, the better, because there's a lot of psychological damage that can go on if you find out these things later in life. And then some people are more, the difference is some people are more resilient than others to cope with certain things. And some people, it could just go down the mental illness route, you know, and it affects the mental health. The next minute it's mental illness. And there's so much things that are affected and that can cause mental illness because of something as simple as finding out your father's not my father. So you saying that you're going to do this book and you've been interviewing all these people. How has that felt for you? Has it felt good interviewing all these people? Has it felt like you can really connect? How has that been for you from that perspective of being the interviewer and hearing other people's stories?
I think it's been incredibly therapeutic in a lot of ways that I've, and I've also felt amazingly privileged, because, you know, there's this sort of random strange person getting in touch with you. And people have been, you know, really open and generous. And I'm learning to actually not say anything at all until the last sort of quarter of an hour, because I get so much more when they're just talking. And even if a lot of it isn't going to be used in the book, it doesn't matter. It's just, I feel it's quite helpful for them as well to have someone listening to them. And I mean, quite a few people have said, you're the first person I've ever spoken to about it out of the family.
Wow.
But it's difficult because, I mean, it's hard to talk to your parents about it. I mean, certainly, I you know, when I tried to speak to my mother about my real father, because I was desperate to know information about him, and it was really, really, she didn't really want to know, and she didn't really want to she just didn't want to tell me anything. She kind of, you know, one minute I'd find she'd say, oh, I just didn't really care about him, and then the next minute, you know, I'd find she'd say, oh yes, you know, we really loved each other. And it was really, really difficult. And I mean, I know my brother and I are 2.5 years apart, so I know that the affair carried on for at least that long. And he used to come round a lot in the evenings. And I mean, so I knew him until he died when I was 16. He drove me mad, actually, because I was at that age where, you know, you're a teenager, you want to watch Top of the Pops, and he wanted to watch the news or whatever it was. I could never watch what I wanted to on telly. But I mean, my brother and I thought he was probably gay, because he never seemed to show anyone any affection. And they'd obviously made this pact, like, I'm not going to show any affection to you whilst the children are there. I'm not going to show any affection to the children so they don't start wondering what's going on. So there was this kind of, felt like a very kind of almost a cold person in our lives.
Wow.
Who never gave anything away. And about 5 years ago, I decided to go. His brother had died, but his sister-in-law was still alive, my aunt, therefore, in Colombia. And so I went to Colombia to kind of meet her. I'd known about her as a child, but I didn't know she was my aunt then. And just to hear about it. And she was saying she'd never seen two people more in love with each other. And again, that's a lovely thing. And that really made me feel better. But you know, you don't trust things anymore. So I wasn't sure, do I really trust that? Or did she just say that to kind of make me feel good about them and myself? And so it is really strange. And it's sad in a way. I mean, they had a lovely photo of him cuddling I now know she's my cousin, but cuddling his niece. Mm. And I just thought, oh, you know, he obviously was a really loving guy. You could see it in his eyes in that photo. And I never got any of that love from him. So it's very poignant always. The whole, everything around that situation is potentially quite hurtful. And so it's a strange thing. And I think, I mean, someone was saying, Nina, this is exactly like Life Clubs, because I sort of started Life Clubs to help people not have to feel alone in life, alone in the world, to help have a kind of almost like a sort of some tips and tricks to kind of cope with life. And this is the same thing. I'm wanting to help people who are in my situation and will find themselves in my situation through test tubes and DNA and everything, just to help them have a kind of book they can go to, which isn't just about me. It's about a wealth of different people with different experiences and how that could make them feel they weren't alone, and to learn from all of us and all our experiences, and just realize how it, you know, to help people, I suppose. That's, they're both, everything I do is the same. It's got the same kind of like, yeah, I want people to be happy, whatever it is, however it happens, let's do it. So it's, so yeah, that's, sorry, I've gone completely off your question. But
No. I mean, I just thought that that's a great connection that you just made there with regards to your business. I thought that was a brilliant connection with regards to Life Clubs, in terms of this is what you experienced in your life. And there's probably a level of you feeling alone, on some level with regards to that, and you starting up this business where you want people to feel connected. And that's probably, that's what coaching's about. When you work with people who are coaches, it's about supporting people to live their dreams. And what I thought was really interesting was the fact that your father was there every night, in most evenings. And so that's obviously a lot of love there, and that must have been very difficult for them to maintain that facade, you know. But yeah, I suppose again, it's a generational thing. I think some that sort of generation were very good at those sorts of secrets. Yeah, think about it. I think people are coming out a bit more now. People are like, we need to talk about this, we need to talk about that. Everything's out now of this generation. But there was a generation where there were all these secrets. But it's really interesting how you said, you know, that connection there was, it was obviously there, but he obviously really must have loved you guys because he wanted to be around you. And I suppose that was probably enough for him to be around you every single evening. That's and to feel connected, you know?
Making me feel really moved. I hadn't thought of it like that. Yeah, I can see that now. That's, so, whether I drove him mad or not, he was there and he could see us and what was happening to us. Oh, that's made me feel really quite moved, Tanya. Thank you.
Oh, bless. Yeah. No, I was just thinking, because as you were speaking about him being there every night, I was just thinking, well, you know, he just wants to be around you. He's just turning up every day, you know, to watch his child grow. But that whole kind of feeling of, okay, we've got to keep this a secret, but I want to be a part of her life, you know, because he could have easily just gone, couldn't he? You know,
just gone off.
But the fact that he's actually making an effort to be there all the time and saying he's got to watch the news or whatever, it's sometimes it's interesting, that kind of love. I kind of feel the same, similar thing with my father. My father wasn't a man that would say, I love you. He didn't use those words, you know. But I recognised, I had a real problem with that as a young person, thinking, you've never said you love me and all that kind of lot. But I realised that that's a generation, but he showed me he loved me, do you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes it's not always about words, it's about actions, and he was always there. The fact that he was always there. And that's what I was just thinking, he was always there. Your father was always there.
Yes.
And in that generation, that's love, you know, because they're not going to come out and say all the words and the sweet nothings, but in terms of the actions and the support, they're there, you know. And whereas if they don't want to be there, they wouldn't be there. So I think that's a really key thing to acknowledge with regards to your
father. That's a really lovely thought, and thank you very much for that. I agree. I mean, because it's always been interesting. I mean, my brother always kind of goes, oh, it didn't mean anything to me, I didn't really care. And it's very Freudian. I mean, my brother obviously had that love from my mother, where, you know, as a girl, I wanted that love from my father.
Yes.
And not to feel that from either father, actually. So I kind of like, you know, I've got two, but not, I've got none in a way. And not to feel that felt very, very weird. And it is really ridiculous. You're the one studying therapy, aren't you? I mean, it's ridiculous how that seems to persist, that the woman needs the, I certainly see it with my children as well, you know, that the girls would want the love from their father. I mean, having my love isn't really enough. They want his love. And of course he gives it to them in spades because he is very, very loving. He's this generation. But it is very interesting. That simple kind of, I'm a man, I've got the love of my mother, I'm a woman, I need the love of my father. So
That is interesting. That there's a track, there's a record by Carleen Addison. I loved it. I remember used to listen to it when I was young, because there's just girls in my family. But I feel the same because I've got a girl and a boy as well, and I see that kind of, you love them both. I always say I love you both the same, you know, children, but there is that connection with your son, a mother and a son, and a father and a daughter. There's a different kind of connection. I would say different rather than less than, but I remember, I think it's because as a woman, Carly Anderson said it in a track, Piece of Clay, it's like, what was it? Fathers stop criticizing, is it fathers stop? Got to sing it. Criticizing your sons, is to criticize them. And mothers, please leave your daughters alone. Because as mothers, it's like continuously, there's a molding thing going on, because you're seeing that woman as if she's going to be a woman, and you're probably seeing yourself in that woman. And there's constant kind of trying to groom them almost, really, which I suppose I'm now, as a, through doing the therapy, I'm realizing, okay, I can't do this. I'm trying to pull back. But I think it's natural for a woman to kind of see that woman in their daughter, just so it's natural for a son to see the man in him. And sometimes it can be more pressure, because you want him to be, the father wants him to be that man, you know, that he's got to make him tough enough, he's got to make him strong enough, and he's got to make him to be able to withstand X, you know. And the woman's, I've got to treat her how to be a lady, I've got to teach her how she's going to be able to cope with life and cope with the men. And, you know, so you've got all these things as a woman, you understand the woman, and as a man, you understand the man. So if you drop that, it's easier to connect with the man or the opposite sex, you know. Absolutely. So when I thought about that song, I remember listening, because I was always into really kind of melancholic deep music. I loved deep music as a kid. Is it me, Stevie Wonder? I was listening to Anita Baker, Nina Simone when I was young, you know, and I was and it wasn't my time.
You should be singing those songs.
Should write music.
Definitely. That, I think that when, if you stop these podcasts, that's going to be what needs to fill the space.
Thank you very much. Bit of life coaching.
I was becoming a Netflix junkie, and I thought, come on, Nina, stop it. You know, do this writing. You've always wanted to do it. So it's been my evening instead of Netflix. It's been my treat, is to sit and write an interview in the evenings and things. Oh, so brilliant. Yeah, it's been really good.
Oh, that does sound, I love that. That sounds amazing. You're being your treat to kind of, to write. And because you have to disconnect from everything else, don't it? We can so get into technology. It's so easy to watch a movie and just relax. And when you want to say something in the world, it's quite important. It's quite important. It's almost like, you know, you've got to get it out now. Yeah. You've got to share. And another person I love is Maya Angelou. And she always says, if she didn't write, I know why the caged bird sings, she wouldn't have helped so many people who had gone through abuse. You know, because it's always very hush hush if you've gone through abuse of some kind, isn't it? So the fact that she wrote about it in her book, she must have helped so many people. So I just feel, with regards to what you're doing, with regards to the book, with regards to your father, there must be so many people out there who have gone through something similar, and it must be so interesting for them to hear, and also maybe connective as well, to understand, okay, I'm not alone in this. And there's some comfort in feeling like I'm not alone in this situation. I feel that with anything, really. Because it's not something we talk about. I don't know anyone that's gone through that, but I probably do. There probably is loads of people in my network that do, but then they haven't spoken about it. So, you know.
There's one in 10. And people don't know who their real father is. Definitely are lots of us. And the moment you start asking, I mean, the moment I've just asked people I know, and they've gone, actually there's such and such and such and such. So there are a lot of us. And I think it's really nice as well to be meeting other people who are in a similar situation. And hopefully through the book, when it's finished, that will be a way of them meeting each other as well. But yeah, if anyone is interested in having a chat, you'll let them know how to get in touch with me, will you?
Yeah, no, totally. Well, basically, I'm just going to put it out now. So, Nina, you want to give your details. You can give your details right now. I mean, they can approach Communication Doctor, but also it'd be great to approach you direct. Would you like to give your details in terms of your website for life clubs and email?
Oh, thank you. Yes, so it's life clubs. .com is the website. I always say it's like the opposite of death, and where we go dancing with an S on the end. Lots of clubs, lifeclubs.com, and I'm Nina at lifeclubs.co.uk.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah,
excellent.
Please do get in touch through me or through Tanya. Is fabulous. Thank you.
Fabulous, brilliant. And if anybody gets in touch with me with regards to the story, I will pass it on. But if not, you can contact Nina direct, and that'd be absolutely lovely. That's brilliant. Thank you very much, Nina. I'm going to bring it to a close now. Such a fascinating story, and I do wish you luck, and I can't wait to read the book and have you back on the show once you are publishing the book and doing the book launch. We'll have you back on and you can talk about it and talk about all those experiences. Maybe have some people that have gone through that journey on the book with you. That'd be interesting to come back on the show. And I've said it here, so.
Fabulous. Well, we want to have you sing to us next.
Oh, I just sing for fun. I don't see myself as a singer. I just like to sing for I'm a shower singer, I always say, you know, but.
Well, when you decide to come out the shower and sing, we'll be
brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Thank you very much, Nina.
Oh,
so, brilliant. So I'm going to say from Tanya Communication Doctor and Nina Grunfeld, adios.
Adios.
One of my takeaways from this show was just purely awareness, more awareness about the fact that there's 1 in 10 people who don't know who their real fathers are and how common that is. And also from a storytelling point of view, I thought it was great to have the idea of bringing a book together, of having a collection of stories from different people's experiences and how the experiences affected them in their lives, whether it be positive or negative, or maybe it be something good. It'd be interesting to see how everything turns out, and I would invite people all to get in contact with me or get in contact with Nina to explore some of those ideas further. But thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking to Nina again to see what happens as we look forward into months to come. Okay.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.